Well, I have to say, I feel way better up here today than I did yesterday. And not that there's no pain in the story left or emotion left, but yesterday was just difficult start to finish for me. So I appreciate y'all bearing with me through that. So we're going to start continue the journey today, and I want to share with you the faith part of my journey. And I thought, how can I talk about faith without walking it in front of them? So I have some slides to go with what I'm talking about today, and I decided to hand over the creative side of those slides to my daughter, who's 14 years old. And so she has provided the art to go along with it, and I'll be as surprised as you are as we go through them, because I have no idea what she's done. So I like to do that. I like to take... You can't hear me?
You're here in the back? Okay.
I got to be like this?
Hold on. Like a rap.
Okay. So that's pretty common in my life. I like to take stressful situations that I'm in and then just like have somebody throw wrenches at me. So that's kind of what it feels like. But at the same time, my daughter, she likes money. And she also likes to express herself creatively. And so I thought, you know what? I'm gonna show my daughter some love this week by laying down my life a little bit and encouraging her in that. And so I hope that as you see Kaya this week, that maybe you can tell her about the slides that you saw and encourage her and love her a little bit with me in that. Trying to get this thing perfect so I don't have to keep messing with it.
Doing great.
Thank you. So, going through my faith journey, so I approached faith like all things in my life as an achievement, like patience. If I was patient, then I had gained patience. It was mine. If I was kind, I had gained kindness. I was a kind person. And so faith to me was much like that. I thought it was something that was mine. Something that I had achieved. But like everything else, like patience and kindness, God had to show me that it wasn't mine. None of it was mine. It was basically on loan to me from Him. And like many things, God used the relationship with my wife to show me these things. It's like ironing sharpening iron, but it doesn't feel like that when it's happening. It feels worse than that. But yeah, I'm thankful for it. So this played out. There's a lot of situations that Laura and I got into over the years with finances, like many young couples. But God was continually faithful to us in that, brought us through many amazing things. And those things were designed to grow our faith, and they did. But everybody grows at a different rate, and everybody experiences things at a different rate. And no two of us are the same in this body. And so I took something that God gave me, my faith, to use as an encouragement, and I used it to tear somebody down. And so one of these situations with our finances, I don't remember the exact circumstances of it, but we had a bill coming up, and in some miraculous way, God showed up and provided it. And then pretty close on the heels to that, we had some other thing that we needed an amount of money for. And so Laura, I could see she was struggling with it, you know, just like, how's this going to happen? And I was like, what is wrong with you, Laura? Are you not experiencing the same thing? Did you not just see God show up last week? Were you not with me in that? What is wrong? What are you not seeing? Why is your faith not growing? And So rather than taking the faith that God was giving me and using it to encourage my wife, I was correcting her and scolding her and making her feel not enough. I've never had something so quickly taken away from me that I thought was mine than my faith in that situation. Over those next couple weeks, I became the most faithless, doubtful, fearful person I'd ever been. So the same fear that she was experiencing over the finances, God decided, I'm going to let you feel what she's experiencing. And it was horrible. And so, but he had to show me that it's not mine. This faith that I've given you, it's not yours. I've given it to you, and I've given it to you for the encouragement of others. So thankfully, it was a short period, and he gave it back. It was literally like something that was just taken away and given back. And so it's not something that I had to walk along. You know, he quickly gave it back to me, but it had to come with a heart change. And so, but yeah, that was a difficult thing. So 1 Corinthians 4:7 says, "What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as if you had not?" And so I was boasting over my faith of something that it was mine. This is going to be awesome. So each of us, whether you know it or not, we all have a measure of faith. Every single person in this room came in today, picked a chair, sat down, and without inspecting the welds, checking the nuts and bolts, you plopped down with the hope that the object of that faith was going to meet your needs. So we all have this measure of faith. God is cultivating it individually in each one of our lives. So we have some small plants that are growing at a certain rate. We have corn, we have peas. Everybody's growing and being cultivated by God in a different way. So I talked a little bit yesterday that I lived a pretty wild life. I didn't share, however, that I really liked motorcycles. And so during this time, I had a number of motorcycles. And a weekly thing that I liked to do was we would drive our motorcycles about 200 miles an hour around the 610 loop and the Hardy Toll Road. So, and this wasn't a one-time event. I put 20,000 miles on my bike in 1 year, and it wasn't a commuter. It was just for fun. We'd just go out at night. So 20,000 miles in 1 year, just night rides. It was a lot. We rode all the time. So my faith in my bike, however, was unwarranted and undeserved. I had friends that died during this time. I saw multiple of my friends lifelighted from crash scenes. I had a buddy of mine that went down right next to me at 160 miles an hour. And he lived, but I mean, I watched him slide 400 yards down 59. It was terrible to watch, but so I didn't have a faith problem. I mean, obviously, I put a lot of faith in that bike. But the biggest killer on a bike is second guessing. It's doubt. Doubt and second guessing took more people out on rides than I can count. It was that last second tap of the brakes, laying off the throttle when you should be full on. These last minute decisions were a killer on a bike. There was one night we were going down 59, and I was riding a wheelie because we just like to be on one wheel most of the time. That's just the way we like to ride. And I was in the front, and there was about 20 bikes behind me. And as I'm as I'm in the wheelie, I look ahead and there's probably a 20-foot 2x4 in the road. And I didn't have enough time to put my front wheel down and clear the 2x4. And I also knew I had about 20 bikes behind me, and they probably hadn't seen it at that point. So I just made the decision, put my faith in my bike, and keep the wheel up. And I just hit the 2x4 with my back wheel, and I just popped over it and kept going. And so as soon as I came down, I put my front wheel down, and I looked in my mirror, and all I saw was headlights spinning like this on the freeway. So I knew it had taken about 5 or 6 bikes down. And it probably wasn't some of the experienced riders that went down that night. I mean, it was the experienced riders, but it wasn't because of their skills. It was the guy next to him that freaked out, pulled off, let the throttle off. And it's those decisions, and much like our lives, that at the last minute we say, I can't do this. I'm not going to make it unless I just take control. Probably should have popped this first, but walking with Jesus, I found, took a whole different kind of faith, though. Mark 6, 7 through 9 talks about Jesus calling the 12 to him. It says, Jesus, calling the 12 to him, began to send them out 2x2 and gave them authority over impure spirits. These were his instructions. Take nothing. Did I lose it? Take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in your belts. Wear sandals, but not an extra shirt. Yeah. Just died or what? Sweet. Hello, hello. I'm still not on. Are you turning me on? Because I'm not on. Okay. Crank me. All right, let me go back over that. So calling the 12 to him, he began to send them out 2x2 and gave them authority over impure spirits. These were the instructions. Take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in your belts. Wear sandals, but not an extra shirt. So what is Jesus showing them there? This is great.
Good job, Brian.
I'm really excited to see what she's done. I hope y'all share this with her because she really put time into it, and she was really pleased with what she had done. So, this if you're going to walk with Jesus, that's what's going to be asked of you, to go out with only your belief in hand. He could have. There was no purpose outside of them not taking anything, other than he was telling them, "I want you to believe me at my word." What other purpose is there? Why would you not take money on a journey? Why would you not take provisions? But he told them, "I want you. You've walked with me. Now I want you to learn to believe me." Most of them took this belief all the way to the grave. You see, most of them ended up dying horrific deaths. So how did they get from doubting to giving up their lives for what they believed in? You've heard that faith without works is dead. But I'll tell you, faith without obedience is impossible. So there's one key factor that's a requirement for faith to be put into action, and that's obedience. Unless you're obedient, there's something holding you back from the works that are required. That's doubt. Doubt and faith are like oil and water, and they cannot exist in the same environment. Doubt comes from a place inside each of us, and it's called our own understanding. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, you all know this one. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight." You might want to keep clicking to check if she's got double. There you go. Yeah. I didn't think she'd stop at just one heart there. So my own understanding, as you've heard, brought me to many terrible places in my life. My own understanding told me, people aren't going to like you if you're different. You can't be respected or accepted without a college degree. And everyone else has it all together except for you. You're just not enough. Those are just a few on a list that would take too long to tell you today. And some of those, like my story, may resonate with some of you. And some of those things are going to sound completely foreign to you. And there's a reason for that. These are the list of my own understanding. And each one of you has your own list of your own understanding. So we have a great adversary in this world to assist us in that own understanding. We know that the devil prowls like a lion seeking to destroy. He's personally crafting seeds of doubt that are tailor-made to each individual, but all speaking the same message. God is a liar. It's his sole mission. You see, if he can convince us of that one thing, he can bring in the separation in our relationship with our Creator. And it's that same separation that he's experiencing. Genesis 3:1 says, "Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, 'Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?'" So if you look at all the translations, every time I see laughing, I'm like, are they laughing at me? I'm like, oh no, they're not laughing at me. So if you look at all the translations of this verse, you'll see a lot of different adjectives to describe Satan. Cunning, crafty, subtle, clever, shrewd, sneaky. These are just some of the descriptive terms of who he is. So I'm sure some of you struggled this week getting here. I'm sure there were last-minute car breaks, last-minute marriage problems, last-minute financial problems, all kinds of last-minute issues. Because you see, anytime the evil one sees the people of God coming together, taking a step of faith, that's where he comes in to destroy. So he has a relentless plan to destroy our faith and to thwart God's plan. So last year, before Laura and I got here, I had a big expectation this year. I was like, man, I'm speaking this year. I've had a lot of rough years getting to Mo Ranch with some of the things I've just said. Finances, car trouble, marriage problems has always been a big one that he comes in and rips us up with. So last year, I think it was the final day, and Laura said, "I'm not going with you. You're a jerk," or something like that. Because I was being a jerk. And I told her, "That's fine. Me and the kids will go." So those are the kind of things that come in last minute to tear us apart. So I had every expectation of this year. I was like, man, if that's what hits me every year when I'm just attending, I'm probably going to be destroyed this year as a speaker trying to make it there. And we're getting into 2 days before. Finances are good. Kids are good. My daughter, Remy, she's 7. This is the Saturday before we're going. She's like, Dad, can we go to the neighbor's house and jump on the trampoline? I said, absolutely not. I said, Remy, you can have the front yard. You can have the street. You're not going back in that backyard and jumping on that trampoline. But I had every expectation, but everything towards the end is going well. Finances are good. Marriage is doing well. These are areas that I'm not currently struggling in. These are areas that the seeds of doubt would be difficult to get into my life. So, how would I be attacked? Well, I did feel inadequate, unqualified. And so, that's where he attacked. I received a phone call that confirmed those things in my head. You're inadequate, unqualified. You see, that's what he does. He likes to use the truth to convince us of a lie. Because the truth is, I am inadequate. I am unqualified. And I have no right to be standing here. But the truth is, thank God for that. Because you met me yesterday, and I promise you, you don't want that guy standing here talking to you. So thank God that I am inadequate. I think one of the best questions ever asked of Jesus is in John 6:28. They say, then they asked him, what must we do to do the work God requires? The answer is found in the next verse. The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. So not just in words, but in a way that affects our actions. Obedience. John 14:21 says, whoever has my commands and keeps them, this is the one who loves me. The one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love them and show myself to them. So I don't think there's a person in here today that doesn't believe in God. You wouldn't be sitting here if you didn't believe in a God. But what does it take to truly believe God? So John 14:21 sounds a little bit different. That sounds like relationship. The one who loves me, the one who is obedient loves me, and then me and my Father will come and have relationship with him. So it's what we gain with our faith in action, and it's what we lose when we choose our own way. This has been the same from the beginning. You see, Lucifer chose to believe in his own understanding that he could be like God. And the result of that was his eternal separation. Adam and Eve made that same choice in the garden, to not believe. It never made sense to me how they could have the world in front of them, everything that they could desire, and trade it all in, an entire kingdom of their own, and a God that loved and cared for them that they had direct relationship with. But with a little seed of doubt and a shift to their own understanding, Satan brought to them and to me the separation from my Creator that he desired. So this path to faith is a training ground. You don't just wake up one day faithful. It's something that has grown and usually comes at a great cost. We see that in the life of Abraham, who's called the father of faith. But yet two times he gave over his wife to other men to save his own skin. I was in a faith boot camp in my walk with God in every aspect of my life. My marriage, I was learning that he was bigger than my addictions and that his design for my marriage was beyond what I could have ever achieved. At this point, however, I had not completely destroyed my finances or my business. So I didn't see a need for a savior in that aspect of my life. I was under the assumption that I could compartmentalize my walk with the Lord. He can take the addiction and the marriage, and I'll run the business. Sounds like a pretty good partnership to me. Malachi 1:6-10 says, "A son honors his father, and a slave his master. If I am a father, where is the honor due me? If I am a master, where is the respect due me? Says the Lord Almighty. It is you priests who show contempt for my name, but you ask, how have we shown contempt for your name? By offering defiled food on my altar. But you ask, how have we defiled you? By saying the Lord's table is contemptible. When you offer blind animals for sacrifice, is that not wrong? When you sacrifice lame or diseased animals, is that not wrong? Try offering them to your governor. Would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you, says the Lord Almighty? Now plead with God to be gracious to us with such offerings from your hands. Will he accept you, says the Lord Almighty? Oh, that one of you would shut the temple doors so that you would not light useless fires on my altar. I am not pleased with you, says the Lord Almighty, and I will accept no offering from your hands." How does that relate? I don't have a lot of lambs to put on the altar. But you see, God wasn't satisfied with the blind and lame sacrifices of my life. It took a small amount of faith to hand him an addiction that had ruined my life, or a marriage that was in shambles. But he wanted all things, especially the things that I felt were mine. I feel like God handed me my business in 2008. I'm a Houstonian, so I spent a short stint in the oil field because that's what you're supposed to do as a true Houstonian. But in the 2008 downturn, I took a severance package and a little bit of money that I had, and I bought my first few cars. I had always bought cars kind of as a side hustle. Find something on Craigslist that had a little meat left on the bone and clean it up and then turn around and flip it. But I responded to after I left the oil field, I ended up... Well, after I spent an entire summer on the golf course, terrified my wife. She was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" I was like, "I'm just going to play golf for a little while." But after that, I responded to an ad on Craigslist that said car lot, $400. And this was so I responded and I went up there. This is the stereotypical car lot situation that you can imagine. They're out in the front spray painting bumpers, taping over check engine lights. I mean, just... when I saw car lot $400, I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but that's what I got. But I made a choice. I wasn't going to operate my business in that way. I was going to have integrity. And so I started buying my little cash cars, $3,000 here, $3,500, fix them up, try and make $1,000, real small deals. But it was mine. It was a cash business, and it was growing steady, and it was paying our bills, and there was a positive trajectory. It was doing well. In the midst of this, God was blessing me. So my four cars soon turned to six cars, and then 10 cars. And about this time, another guy responded to the ad, and he shows up in kind of a similar situation, a younger guy trying to run a little cash business. And we started doing the same thing, and these guys were basically just trying to fill the lot up. And so we didn't have our own licenses. We're basically working under these other guys' licenses, and so they're basically selling access to their license. So this other guy comes in and probably spends the first four or five months doing what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden, one day, I start seeing some BMWs showing up. and some Corvettes showing up. And he's parking them next to my Honda Civics and my Toyota Camrys. And I began to become unsatisfied with what God had given me. And not just with what I had, but I wanted what he had. I wanted the flashiness. I wanted the recognition of having those nicer cars sitting on the lot. So he was, what he was doing was he had signed up with a finance company, and I think he got somewhere between $250,000, $500,000 credit line that he was buying cars on. And so he told me, you need to do it, man. Like, if that's the only way, I mean, obviously, 4 cars are making you good money, 20 cars will make you great money. It's simple math. So the next decision I made would follow me for more than the next decade. I, too, took my business and turned it over to the credit lines. I took the freedom that God had given me, and I turned it in to be a slave to the banks. See, my own understanding brought me into bondage. Proverbs 21:5 tells us, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty." Psalm 27:14. Yes. That. Psalm 27:14 says, "Wait for the Lord, be strong, and take heart. Wait for the Lord." You see, I believed in God, but obviously I didn't believe God. Because if I did, I wouldn't have responded in this way. So as with every other aspect of my life, I thought I could walk with God and do things my way. I didn't trust His plan, His timing, or His vision for my life. This is a mirror of the walk of the Israelites. So much like my life, God's redemption of His people came in an amazing way. You know, I talked about the faith being a journey that He had me on. And through all this, God was faithful in many different ways and kept showing up and kept spurring me on and kept pulling me to Him. He even, during a portion of this time, you know, I was, obviously when you turn yourself over to become a slave, just like the Israelites cried out in their hardship, I entered into a great amount of hardship. Things got very difficult in my life. And so I began to doubt that God even liked what I was doing, wanted me in the car business. I didn't, at this point I hadn't identified, this is me that did this. I'm telling it to you now that I entered into bondage. But I still thought I had made a great business decision, and God was just refusing to bless it. That's hard-headedness, but that's who I am. So during this time, I remember calling out to God and just saying, "Do you not like me to sell cars? Do you find no joy in what I'm doing?" And I remember taking him. I think Dace was about 5 years old at this time. And I was riding with him in the truck, and he started having a conversation with me about Jesus and God. And he was telling me how Jesus and God come and sit with him at night. And the angels come and sing. And I thought, that's pretty cool. So I said, "Tell me about Jesus." And he said, "Well, he's like God." I said, "Okay, well, tell me about God." And he said, "Well, he's like Jesus." And I didn't want to pull, because I didn't want to try and make him say something that he wasn't experiencing. So I just kind of kept kind of asking little questions. Well, what was this like? And it was just kind of a circular thing. He just kept answering me in a circular way. So I just decided I'll pull off. And I was asking him, trying to say, what did he say to you? And he's like, well, he wasn't really saying anything. He was just there. And I was like, well, that's awesome, buddy. You know, you need to, anytime you can spend time, just sit there with him. And so a little bit of time goes on, a couple minutes, and he said, Dad, he did tell me one thing. He said he really likes it when you sell cars. It's amazing that God has to use children sometimes to speak to us. That's how hard-headed, how hard-hearted we are. But it broke me. I mean, just hearing that broke me right there. Because God, it had nothing to do with, God wasn't pleased with me, happy with me. I was just in a training ground of faith, and I wasn't listening. Romans 12:2 says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. See, the patterns of this world are designed to bring us back to bondage. Debt bondage, sexual sin bondage, addiction bondage, all places that we decide, I just don't think you could handle this one, God. Or you're not working it out fast enough or in the way that I see fit. But I'm learning to continually trust God with every aspect of my life. And I'm seeing the fruits of His plan in my life more and more as I release my will. It's not sometimes and with some things, but it's all the time and with everything. Oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. I just went to the end. So we're gonna reroute this thing a little bit. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, I was about to tell you a story that you're gonna have no relation to. So sorry. So I'm gonna go back just a little bit. So I began talking about God's redemption of His people and how it came in amazing ways. And I was comparing that to the Exodus, or to God's Exodus of His people in Israel, and how much it mirrored my life, and how God had showed up in a mighty way to redeem His people. I mean, with the 10 plagues, from blood in the river to even the death of firstborns, the crossing of the Red Sea. Chapter 14 in this, after crossing the Red Sea, ends with their great faith in God. And in chapter 15 in Exodus, we see that they go to a song of praise of His greatness and His great mighty hand in their life. But much like my own life, that same chapter in 15 doesn't close and before fear and doubt enter in. The fear of their immediate needs not being met caused a complete shift in their attitudes and their hearts. So the book of Exodus continues to follow the lives of the Israelites throughout the wilderness for 40 years, a continual story of a faithful God and a faithless people. It's my same story. If my needs are met and I understand how it's going to work, I believe. But if trial sets in, or hardship, or a lack of understanding, I quickly lose faith. Much like the Israelites, I began to look for ways to enter back into my bondage. So back to the car, I'm going to have to shift back, but back to the car business. It was a series of ups and downs for me. I call it being in school with God. I would have streaks of success, but I would quickly take the reins and drive off a cliff. I would beg for a way out, and I would release control, and God would pick me up out of the mud. I played this in and out game with God for years. just like the Israelites. But he met me where I was over and over. I'm going to share a story with you about this and about this faith and how he was growing it in me in this car lot. So during this time, in the car industry, we call them dogs. They're cars that you purchase and they just sit there and they get what's called lot rot. The longer something sits on the lot, the harder it becomes to sell. So in my quiet time, I was reading in Judges, and I was reading the story of Gideon. And in the story of Gideon, Gideon lays out a fleece for the Lord. And he's trying to get God to answer a decision, or help him make a decision, or confirm a decision. And I was trying to confirm the decision, do I stay in this business, or do I go? So I'm reading this story, and Gideon lays out his fleece, and he says, make it wet with the ground dry. And God does it. And then he says, make it dry with the ground wet. And God does that as well. So I read it and I said, wow, God, you really do that for people? You show yourself to people like that? Show me yourself like that. And so I prayed and I said, if you want me to stay in this business, and I'm not doing this on my own, I've got this dog on the lot. And this thing, it was an orange Mustang. I don't think it had a motor in it, or the motor was blown. I mean, to me, it was bigger than a fleece on the ground. It seemed undoable. And so I said, sell that car if you want me in this thing. 2 days later, a guy walks on the lot and he says, he said, that orange Mustang back there, is that for sale? He said, I've been looking for something for a project for my son. Will you sell that to me? And it wasn't even listed. It wasn't listed online. This guy had to show up, and he did. He showed up, bought the car. And I was like, that is unreal. But Gideon got to do it twice, Lord. And I've got this infinity that's sitting over there, and it's a little bit worse. And I know it sounds crazy, but I said, sell the infinity. And 2 days later, another guy shows up and buys the infinity. It was unbelievable. It made no sense. But God was giving me steps along the way and showing me I'm real. I'm here. Believe me. Put your faith in me. Stop trusting in your own understanding. I'm close, you said, Andy? Two? Matthew 20, I hope I didn't get you out of order, bro. Matthew 23, okay, good. You can just read these because I'm running out of time. There's another one, Matthew 23, and then 2 Chronicles 7. See, both of these here, if you read them, these aren't calls to salvation. This is a call to the people of God who have rejected him and have gone their own way. God pleads with us continually. Stop going your own way. Turn from your wicked path of pride. And believe me.
Sorry, you got 10 minutes.
Bro. Yeah, I'm trusting. But it's getting messy.
Do I hear 45?
Another fleece for you.
No, we're doing pretty good. Yeah, so we do have a second. Consider the verses. Do we have pictures on that one, or she ran out of room for pictures, I imagine. There's a lot of verse there. No pictures. So I continually and disobediently rejected God's direction in my life, and I refused to do things his way at great, great cost to myself, my family, and my business. So this is where you can go to the Romans 12:2 now. This is kind of the part I skipped, and now we'll go back to it. But this is where God tells us to not conform to the patterns of this world. Because the patterns of this world are designed to bring us to bondage and all types of bondage. You know, I've shared with you some of my bondages, and you know, much like with my story, there's things in my story that I'm sure sound absurd to you. But I promise you, if you shared your story, it would sound absurd to me, because we're all left with what we understand, and our own understanding is what gets us in trouble. So he tells us not to conform to the patterns of this world. Don't enter into the debt bondage like I did. Don't enter into the sexual sin bondage, the addiction bondage. All places that we decide that God's just not big enough. So as great as that Gideon story was for me, I don't want another one. I don't want to enter back into that same place. You know, God did those amazing things for the Israelites. You know, they cross the Red Sea. They cross the Red Sea. They spend an entire chapter singing his praises about it. And then immediately they start crying out, "Where are you? How are you going to show up?" And you see from there that God decides these people are not going to walk unless I show up continually, daily in their life. They don't want the big thing. They don't want to wait on me. I'm going to have to provide them with daily manna. Well, I don't want the daily manna. I want to trust God in a big way. I want to believe that he's going to show up in an amazing way. I don't need him to feed me daily. I don't need the Gideon story again in my life. I wouldn't ask him for it. He did that for me. How disrespectful would that be? So I want to continue to walk by faith over and over again. And I want that faith to grow. 1 Corinthians 13:11. Oh yeah, we've already gone that one. It says, "When I was a child, I talked like a child, and I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me." So that's what I want. I want a deeper faith, a deeper relationship. What do we have? Oh my gosh. That's awesome. And this faith that he's growing me in, as I choose to not just believe in him, but believe him, believe the words that he's spoken into my life and what he's walked me through, he's strengthening me. And that faith is leading me and has led me to a new hope. It's not something empty and fading like this world, but it's eternal and immeasurable. So I'd like you to consider these things as I wrap up today. In what way is my own understanding not giving God access to my life? And how is Satan twisting the truth in my life to have me believe a lie? Because that's what he does. That's his design. And he does it in each one of our lives. So I'd like you to consider that as we move towards our next talk tomorrow in hope. In what way is my own understanding not giving God access to my life? And how is Satan twisting the truth in my life to have me believe a lie? Because that's where what I've noticed, he loves to do that. The truth. He uses the truth to convince us of a lie. Continually. I mean, that's what he did with Satan. I mean, that's what he did himself. Or with Adam and Eve. That you can be like God. And that was the truth. They did become like God. They understood good and evil at that point. But the lie was that it will be a good thing. And it was not. The truth about my own life was that I heard before I came here is that I am inadequate. I am incapable. But the lie is that's a bad thing. It's not. So thank you for that. Thank you that I'm incapable. So what's happening in your life? In what way is he twisting the truth to have you believe a lie? In what way is he using your own understanding to convince you that God is not enough? So that's it for today.